Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you love to hike and go backpacking, perhaps your lifestyle changed a bit when the kids arrived. Perhaps not. Certainly how you hike, how you approach the sport of hiking changes when you're also toting diapers and worrying about who's getting too close to that ledge along the trail. Joining us now in the studio is Jeff Ault. He's a veteran hiker who has tracked the 21,060-mile Appalachian Trail. He wrote a book about that called A Walk for Sunshine. Jeff also has walked the 218-mile John Muir Trail with his wife and hiked across Ireland with his 21-month-old daughter on his back. Not only did he survive that last excursion, he lived to write a book about how to bring the kids along for the walk. Welcome back to the show, Jeff Ault.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on this morning.
How long have you been hiking? When did you start?
Since I was a young boy, my family would often took us camping, and we pretty much did everything outdoors. But I really locked on to a passion for hiking after I was about 12 or 13, and we were in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and my brothers and I were allowed to go out for a night in the woods without parents, ill-equipped, unprepared, but we did it. We survived, and we felt brave and bold, and the seed was planted, and it's ever since it's been a lifelong adventure.
A lot of kids get into it because they have to earn a patch for something.
Yeah.
You know, Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or Brownies or whatever.
And I was one of those scouts as well. Yeah. And I learned some of the basics as a Boy Scout, which also taught me to get out there and explore. So, yeah, some of my first how-to adventures were as a scout.
And your parents, how many kids were in your family? What was it like?
Yeah, a family of five. So, you know, and camping's affordable. So when you have a large family like that, you're on a budget. And so camping was something we could do and still enjoy everything around you. You could go to the lake. You could go to the forest. You could go to all the neat resorts. But we would camp instead of stay in the hotel, which as an adult, I really appreciate that we did that.
Because now the hotel seems so much nicer to us.
But after you get past that grimy feel of no shower for a day, you're fine.
I think one of the keys is to just try to stay very neat and clean as you can when you're on the trail. But make sure you brush your hair every day.
Yes.
Don't forget to brush your teeth.
Yeah. You know,
routine.
You could actually stay very clean and keep up with all your hygiene if you plan and prepare. And so yeah, that's part of planning for any trek. So.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Jeff Ault. He will be at the Book Loft tonight at 7 p.m. He is a veteran hiker and author of Get Your Kids Hiking, How to Start Them Young and Keep It Fun. If you have a great story to tell about your experience taking the kids for a hike, taking them backpacking, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And also, if you have a favorite place to hike in the Central Ohio area, now's the time to share it. Hike with kids, I should say. Give us a call and share that, too. You can also post it on Facebook if you'd like. So how young, you know, you've already said you walked around, you know, Ireland with your 21-month-old on your back, I'm sure with an official baby backpack type right. of equipment. But how young is too young, do you think?
You should start with infants. And we were just talking about you should start while you're an expecting parent to carve out the routine. With the infants, you're more focused on yourself. What you're doing is carving this out as a daily routine. And then as your child becomes more alert and mobile, they think that's just what you do. And this is your special time with your child. And you're focusing on your child. And what it could just be as simple as stepping out your front door and walking around the neighborhood. So you keep it simple. You set aside 30 minutes. Grab a friend, grab your spouse, grab whoever, but don't make it too complicated where you have to cancel because something didn't work out, and just start walking. And then as your child develops, then they start to walk and they're leading, and from there it just grows.
Joining us now, Peg Hanley. She is with the Columbus and Franklin County Metro Park System. Thanks for joining us, Peg.
Thank you, Ann.
Do you ever see people out on the trails that you're shocked at how young the children are or...
Well, I was just talking to Jeff about Sharon Woods, where I'm located, my park across from St. Anne's, and we've got doctors who regularly send women who aren't able to have their baby right away for walking. So Jeff and I were talking, hey, you know, start when the baby's in the womb and go from there, kind of like a baby that's heard classical music. So I've seen lots of pregnant ladies walking around Sharon Woods. I've seen women and men carrying babies with that front gadget, which I'm not sure what it's called, with babies that look like they're just 2 months old in that.
There's been some news lately about those front carriers that it can cause hip dysplasia in babies if they're not situated them correctly. Jeff, do you talk much about equipment in your book and give people directions about those kind of things? Because I didn't know that until I read an article just a few days ago.
Yes. I talk all about what gear you should have. I recommend going to an outfitter for the carrier, because the outfitters they make backpacks and they understand the ergonomics, and they're going to walk through how, you know, you should not keep your baby in there all day. You should, when you're walking, get your child out. Check to make sure there's circulation. They need a break too, but they're also absorbing their environment. And so as you're walking, you want them to, you can like have them touch things by putting things in their hand or holding a flower up to their nose so they can smell odors. And because babies, you don't think that they're absorbing this, but they recognize their mom's voice very shortly after birth. So they are absorbing everything. But yeah, you need to be very mindful of your very precious payload there. So,
and you might have to be very mindful of the schedule you set for yourself. It's going to change.
Yes. I talk about how you should stop every like 10 or 15 minutes and take a break. Unsnap if it's the baby carrier, the front carrier, take the baby out. And if there's a nice patch of grass, you could lay a blanket out and just kick back and just be a parent and let the baby explore in a safe area and then pack up again and walk a little further. So My big push is to make it interesting for them and use all dimensions, explore all their senses, even at that young age, but frequently get them out of the carrier.
And adjust your expectations. You might not go 12 miles that day. You may only go 2 miles that day.
Yeah.
Things are going to change.
The biggest adjustment for a parent is when that child starts walking.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until that stage, you can go as far and long as you want. But then it's what I call the child-directed phase. And it's a critical phase because you don't want to discourage your child. So you let them lead the pace. You let them show you what they're interested in. Forget the view. If that's your goal, you might spoil it for the child, because their view is everything is new to them. They're discovering as they go along, and you have to put yourself at their level. So you have to get down at their level. And if they want to look under that rock, boy, that's the first time they've looked under that rock. So you just need to engage. And if you do that, then you're re-exploring your own childhood too, so you can make it fun for yourself.
I imagine, Peg Hanley, you see people doing it the right way and people doing it maybe not the right way.
Mostly the right way.
Yeah,
I mean, we see a lot of people, a lot of folks start taking their kids to Inniswood Metro Gardens because we have a specific little 2-acre garden just for kids. So everything's kind of childproof, but not childproof. But you will see parents, you know, letting, like as Jeff says, letting the kid lead the way. And then you'll see parents that are sort of what I call the drill sergeant parent, that they need a little bit of work, like go touch that leaf. Well, that kid doesn't want to touch that leaf. That kid wants to go run into the water and chase the dragonfly. So you see a little bit of it, but mostly all good, Anne.
Right. A child's view is not the view of the mountains necessarily. It's the view of the rock in front of them.
You know, everything is a view to that child.
Uh-huh.
They're exploring everything for the first time. And the metro parks, such as right here in Columbus, is a great, you know, destination for parents as well. And with the naturalists on hand, I mean, you can just absorb lots of great ways to interact with your children by going on. A lot of these programs are free, and they're usually available in all the metro parks and the trails. You can pick a trail that fits your age level and so, yeah, and you can pick up quite a few tips just by taking one of the guided talks or following some other parents.
And that's true with the metro parks, but it's also true for the national parks and state parks. They all do the same thing. They all really cater to kids these days.
Right. You know, and it's funny is the first thing I do before I go anywhere is I Google or what have you, look up the area and what parks are available. Every park has a website. And you can pretty much figure out where to go that fits your own family needs before you get there, right off the website, even print some simple maps and then find out where the visitor center is. And your older child can do the exploring for you because they're usually technologically more savvy than you. So let them do the research for you and have a planning meeting. And that's part of the adventure, too, is gearing up, ginning those kids up before they even get out there and getting them all excited what they might see.
When you did the walk in Ireland with your 21-month-old, I know that that was a place where you stopped at a lot of bed and breakfast along the way, which was, you know, so smart. But how often did you let the 21-month, I think you had a 4-year-old nephew with you. How often did you stop and actually let the toddler out to walk around?
Quite frequently, like every half hour or so, we would stop. I mean, she was just amazed at everything. I mean, we're walking through a sheep pasture, and these sheep are just walking around us, and we're in a cow pasture, and there's cows, and she's just starting to label things, so she goes, cow. She's just fascinated by these things that we just drive past every day, you know. And so we are stopped and looking at this in the Atlantic Oceans in the distant view. It's just stunning. And so we got her out all the time. And now when we're walking along, though, children's attention span is short and they may become distracted. Or so we would tie like her favorite book and like a magnifying glass or binoculars to the pack, and she could pull that in and engage with, like, by looking further out or reading her book. And then when she's done with it, she can just let it drop. And we would also tie a pacifier to the pack so she could reel that in and then drop it when she's done. And so, you know, there's a few tricks you learn real fast when you're trekking with a child. So
you started camping and so forth when you were pretty young, but were you worried about being out in the middle of nowhere, so to speak, or relatively speaking, with a youngster like that?
Well, what I recommend is, you know, kids are pretty durable, but infants are fragile. So I recommend setting up a base camp with the real little bitties until they can carry their own gear.
Okay.
Because the mantra is the lighter the pack, the more enjoyable the journey for you as an adult. So you don't want to hurt your back trying to plan this little overnight trip with your family. But you can usually get that same exciting adventure in by returning to a domesticated campground at night. As far as the fear, though, you're safer in the woods than you are in most cities, USA. And that's the sad truth. My kids, at age 4, my son, my family's, we've all encountered bears together. But my son was explaining what to do to grown-ups if we encounter a bear. And he knows exactly what to do because we've talked through it. We practice and talk about this so there's not a panic. So we've walked through all the scenarios you should be aware of, but not be afraid of. Mm-hmm. And so we know that we don't walk up to get a better picture. We use the zoom lens. The kids know that if you encounter an animal in Ohio, you know, we do have some black bear in Southeast Ohio and this and that, but for the most part, you don't see bears in this area. Mm-hmm. But you can, kids absorb everything. They learn fast. You can teach them the leave no trace tips and techniques at a very young age. We keep it simple. We say take nothing but pictures and memories, you know, and we call it catch and release. So they'll put a pill bug in a little magnifying little bin and look at it through the magnifying lens, and they release it. And so kids are just amazing out there. So
we're talking about taking your kids for a walk, getting them hiking, camping, backpacking. My guest, Jeff Ault, he is an author. The book we're talking about in specifically is Get Your Kids Hiking, How to Start Them Young and Keep It Fun. Also with us is Peg Hanley from Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. If you have a favorite place you like to take your kids hiking and want to share it with us, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or if you have a question or comment, you can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's a beautiful time of the year to hike. Any time of the year is a good time. We're going to talk about winter hiking, but specifically we're talking about hiking with kids. If you have a good story to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guests in the studio, author Jeff Ault, his new book is called Get Your Kids Hiking, How to Start Them Young and Keep It Fun. Also with us, Peg Hanley of the Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. If you have a question or comment for them, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Let's talk about the time of the year, because there was a story in the book, Jeff, where you came across a family. You were just doing a day hike, but you came across a family that was very ill-prepared for the elements. They thought it was going to be a nice fall day, and it turned into winter.
Yeah, we were in the mountains where, you know, in the spring, winter, and fall, it can snow. And this husband, wife, and two children had set out on an overnight hike, but they were wearing cotton, which is a big no-no in the backcountry. Usually cotton's a nice fabric to have on when you're going to the beach. But when you're in a climate that can be moist, rainy, it doesn't even have to be snow. Cotton retains moisture, which can cool your inner core temperature and cause hypothermia. And then they had those throwaway plastic rain parkas, which work fine at an amusement park, but they don't breathe. So what that does is it just kind of encapsulates the moisture on your clothes. So we run across this family, and they're hypothermic. So I was with another friend, and we were aware what's going on. So we went through the routines of helping them, warming them up, and talking through with them to unpack their gear and get dry clothes on.
Basic things like there's adults with children, and they were all standing around in wet clothes.
Yes.
And you had to tell them, get out of your wet clothes.
Right. And that's
what happens. I mean, people, when they aren't thinking straight.
They were just kind of huddled together, all shivering, and they were in the first stages of hypothermia. So you know, with some, we cooked up some hot cocoa but yeah, they probably didn't even realize what was happening, you know, or were unaware of that condition. And the thing is a lot of people are trying to do right by getting their kids into the outdoors without all the basic information. And it's not a lot of hard information. It's real simple stuff. So the synthetic clothing is one big thing, where you dress in layers, polypropylene and wools and fleece and waterproof, breathable rain parkas, and you dress in layers. Mm-hmm. And for a child, they're growing up. They're growing fast. So the name brand gear, you don't have to get that. About every big box store sells this stuff until you're fully grown or they're a teenager and they want the main label on their garment. You can just, you know, use the hand-me-downs, mm-hmm. or borrow from your friends, or buy neutral colors. So when your daughter outgrows her outfit, your son can wear it, or buy an extra size too big and roll them up. But having the right gear is so essential, from the clothing to the right shoes to sunscreen and bug spray. And you should have some first aid knowledge. Mm-hmm. And even if it's a simple first aid course you take, or if there's a wilderness first aid course in your area, you'd really benefit from that as well.
Kevin in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Kevin. You have a story about hiking with kids?
Well, yes. I hope that another Irish hiking story won't overload the program.
Well, not at all.
But I went to Knocknaree, which is in Western Ireland, with my teenage daughter, and Knocknaree is a very visually intimidating climb. And my daughter said, there's no way I'm going up there. And at that moment, a much younger kid came running down the hill, which pretty much shamed her into going up. And she was very glad that she went up and came back down. My point was that although it's important to start kids young with this, if the kids as teenagers aren't associating with other, if they don't have friends who are physically active and want to hike too, you'll lose them at that point in terms of hiking. I mean, what do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, the teenage years can be a tricky time. And you you can try some tricks, but if it's not working, you may want to back off. It's a phase.
Right.
A lot of teenagers are into the social scene at that age. And so, again, going to that view, that 10-mile hike to that view, maybe you think they're capable, but if they haven't walked 10 miles, then that's probably not a realistic goal. Letting them bring a friend and help, letting them help you plan the destination engages them into being part of the trip. So now they're bringing a friend, they're planning the trip, they feel like they're in control. Let them, if they're using their iPods and iPads, and let them do all this internet research, have a pizza party. And, you know, if you can engage those kids, whether it be adding geocaching, where you can take their mind off of the actual physical walking. My big thing is to make it an adventure, not a hike. You know, if you make it so fun that it's an adventure, they forget they're even taking steps. They might be sore the next day and realize that they did take all those steps, though.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for that call. Brad in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Hey. I got to hear the story about the llamas.
Yeah, well, we use our llamas for a lot of different things, including the fiber, but one of the things we really enjoy doing is putting packs on them and taking them hiking down in the Hocking Hills to some of the metro parks. And really kind of makes it fun for the kids as well, because they're engaged with the animals, and they get to kind of lead them around and let them carry the load. So you're not worried about overload them with heavy packs and making it difficult for them. So it makes it an enjoyable time.
Do you go overnight? Are you talking about overnight trips?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the llamas will carry about 60 to 70 pounds of gear. So you can load them up with quite a bit, and maybe take two llamas a piece and put them in a pack string, and away you go. And, you know, you're pulling out real food and camping stoves and all kinds of stuff.
and that is an option. If you are really wanting to take those real young kids on an overnight backpacking trip, that's one way to pull it off, by offsetting the weight of carrying all the gear by using llamas or pack mules or something like that. It takes more logistical preparation, but if you have llamas at the ready, hey, by all means.
Peg, how about llamas in the metro parks?
I'm going to go off from llamas and say we've got 16 pet trails, and I do see, that's where I see teenagers with dogs.
Uh-huh.
So I've not seen a llama at a metro park, but maybe I'm missing the trail where the llamas are. That may be the ancient trail.
But they are pet trails, so they, if you wanted to bring a llama, there's no...
I don't think that's a domestic pet,
Anne. I don't know.
I think that's stretching it. But I do see teenagers with dogs, and that's a good way, too. If the kid's into dogs and that, by all means, we've got four-mile trails, and that's a great way to get a teenager out into a park.
And that's true, too. If you tie the walking into a chore, like the dog needs its exercise,
right,
it needs to walk, or you need to run an errand. If you tie your walk into that, then it's an adventure along the way, but you're accomplishing something too. So, yeah, and then those animal lovers, you know, they'll do about anything for their pets. So
those llamas are pretty cute. Some people domesticize them. Brad, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about hiking with the kids. If you have a good story, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Alex, who writes, consider taking your kids to an orchard and letting them pick directly from the trees. You can also pick strawberries or grapes in season. They will never forget the experience.
Oh, yeah.
That's an itty-bitty way to get started, and taking them on those kind of...
Sure, yeah. Not so much of a hike, but another adventure. It's outdoors. You know, we take our kids to farms all the time, and they're fascinated by that, and there's always an orchard. So that's a great idea, yeah.
Joe in Grove City, you have a story about hiking with five kids in the Rocky Mountains?
Yeah, that was just a day trip that we took, but actually it was about 20 years ago, and my dad just brought it up the other day, and he said, do you remember when you were carrying the one-year-old in a pack in the mountains? And we've just always traveled with our kids. We take them wherever, and we get them out. So with that one, my son was 18 months, the littlest one. My oldest was 10. There were five kids. And the ways we coped were, number one, the 18-month-old, he wanted to get down and walk as much as he could, and the pack became the place that he napped so that we could do a little further walking. The second thing was that the kids just were well-trained, but the older ones would be looking for things to show their younger siblings. So instead of mama saying, oh, look at that flower, oh, listen to that bird, the older ones didn't notice how far we were hiking because they were saying, you know, younger brother, oh, look at that. Oh, look, you know, look, there's a squirrel. And so it got them involved in a way that they took some ownership of that. More recently, something else as a resource for people is if you go to national parks anywhere in the U.S., the national parks all have something called a junior ranger program. We discovered this a few years ago with our now youngest, she was six at the time. And the kids do these activities and scavenger hunts, and then they earn a badge that looks like the ranger badge. And again, it's another way, like Jeff was saying, ways to have them outdoors but have them focused on adventure or on other activities rather than whining about, oh, it's so far, my legs hurt, and all that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, Joe, thank you very much for sharing that.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I've seen people who drive to the pharmacy with enough gear to sink a battleship when they have an infant in tow. How do you make choices about what to bring on a backpacking trip when it comes to very little children? We've already they're fragile, and you have to make sure you have their medicines and whatever they need. But right. How do you divvy up the diapers?
Well, yeah, and that it becomes a weight issue. If you are going to backpack with a child, are they old enough to carry anything yet? A child shouldn't carry more than 20% of their body weight. And that's the max end of it. So if you look at a young child, they're you know, when they're a toddler, they could carry an adventure pack, and they enjoy that too. So their adventure pack they'd be able to carry their water, and some interactive gadgets like magnifying glass or binoculars and pretty much toys and things. Mm-hmm. But, so you may need to have some kind of a logistical resupply like the llamas or a pack mule, right. Unless you have enough adults on board where you can divvy up the weight. Because right. there is a lot of gear typically with a younger infant or toddler, which, mm-hmm. You know, so you have to think through all that because you don't want to injure yourself in doing so. Our overnights with our children have been on the Appalachian Trail most recently, and what we did was we planned to stay in shelters, so I was able to shed my 5-pound tent. Now, that allowed me to absorb some of my kids' gear, and my wife absorbed some of their gear. And then we only went out for a few days, so one of the most the heaviest things in your pack is food. So we then were able to keep our load light by knowing we would only be out a few days, so we didn't have to carry a week's worth of food, for example. And they had a blast. And we made sure to pack the s'mores because food's so important. You don't want to undercut what you have. So, and they knew that I had s'mores on board, and that led them along. And that was the big treat at the end of the day around the campfire. But so you can, you know, and you need your essentials. You need your medicines. You need to think, you know, you pretty much are packing everything that they would need for bedtime. So we had their toothbrushes. We had the allergy medicines and all of that. But the difference is, you know, the thing is they enjoyed sleeping on the little sleeping pad and in their sleeping bag. They felt like real through hikers because they're in this shelter with Appalachian Trail hikers going from Georgia to Maine, and they thought they were cool stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting way to introduce overnight hiking to your kids, to start with it in a shelter, but have them see other people hiking through.
Yeah, and it was neat because then they're asking natural questions, and the hikers treated them so well, and because the hikers aren't seeing little kids like that in a shelter, so it may have reminded them of home because they're living this life removed from home while they're out on their journey. And so to have kids in the shelter was, you know, kind of just a different night for them.
Peg Hanley, how big of a deal are children at the Metro Parks now? How much of your programming is geared toward them?
Oh, I'd say 80% of our programming. one of the things that we're geared at that is just amazing is we established 6 areas at different parks where kids can go off trail. They can climb trees, they can build forts, they can do anything they want. Nobody was coming to those areas, and it was like, what's going on? The generation of parents don't know how to play in the woods. So now we are offering free classes for parents to teach them how to teach their kids to climb trees, skip stones, dig in the mud, look for crawdads. So it's been such a big impetus with the No Child Left Behind movement, but to think that we're having to educate two past generations of parents how to play in the woods. So it's just...
Well, to a certain extent, we've been raised to not to go off trail.
Right.
You know, you're disturbing things if you go off trail. So.
And a little known fact is about 5 years ago, we changed a lot of the rules in the metro parks, and you can go off trails in most metro parks.
Oh.
But most people don't want to go off trails. They're afraid they might see a snake. They're afraid of ticks. You know, and it's like, that's not going to happen. You get a tick, you pull it off. You see a snake, you move on.
Or they do.
They usually do, yeah. But a lot of what we do is with kids, and especially with fall coming up and winter coming up, just lots of things to get kids excited as the seasons change.
Yeah, let's talk about winter hiking, because it's one of our favorite times to go, say, see Hocking Hills, because it's so packed every other time of the year, and but all the wonders are there in the winter and in a very different way.
Yeah, yeah. Winter hiking, the neat thing is you're usually alone. There aren't a lot of people out there. The lights are, a lot of the parks are idle that time of year. So you can really enjoy a very quiet experience, but you'll need to have cold weather gear. So you need to make sure that you are definitely layered up with non-cotton clothing and prepared for sub-zero temperatures. You just, you know. With kids, you know, you might want to have some indoor lodging, perhaps staying in a cabin and day hiking. Even as a grown adult, if I know there's a warm cabin nearby in the winter, I'll prefer that. But I love a good day hike. But then it is fun to head out there for an overnight if you have a rated sleeping bag and a four-season tent that will help keep the moisture or the heat in. And
kids react differently to the elements. They're not always good reporters. How do you manage those issues, cold and heat, and make sure that they're wearing the proper clothing? They're not overheating or
right. Well, you should definitely about every 15 minutes or so stop, take a break, keep them snacked up, keep them hydrated. They're going to burn. You burn more energy when it's colder, and kids need to snack more frequently than you and I anyway. And that's a good time to check to see how they're feeling. If they're not acting themselves, that's an instant, easy indicator something's up, you know. And if they're not enjoying it, then you have to realign what you're doing. So you should have a plan B at all times.
And some kids, some people are not, they're just not suited for the emotional rigors. It's a personality thing. Not everybody's into it, and particularly the bigger family you get. I came from a big family, and not all of us were the same about backpacking and hiking. Very differently. Yeah. Very different, in fact.
Yeah, yeah. My two children, they have majorly different personalities. We're fortunate, though, that they both enjoy
hiking. They like
hiking.
That, yeah.
But then my daughter is all girl. She's into the dolls, the American Girl dolls, that she wears pink, but then she'll go jump in a mud puddle and climb a tree. So I'm just loving that. And then my son, he just goes along with whatever is happening. You are right. And every kid has their own personality. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that, exposing your kids to these adventures prepares them for life, and it gives them a skill that'll last a lifetime. I mean, and it's as Peg and I were talking, it's an unorganized time. Hiking isn't competitive, and it's that downtime. And so getting out there in the winter, fall, spring, summer, whatever time of year, is a time away from all the structure and domestic issues we have. And it's given that your child, you're teaching them that it's okay to take a walk in the woods. You're giving them a life skill, a place that they know they can go forever to think through a problem, get their exercise in, and then carry the torch to protect our trails in the future. So it's just a win-win all around.
We're talking about taking those kids hiking, getting them started young. Coming up, we're going to hear from a Columbus native. He's a wildlife photographer and author of Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places. That's Dudley Edmondson. So stay with us. We'll get to that when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we've been discussing how to get kids interested in hiking. Joining us now by phone from Minnesota is Columbus native Dudley Edmondson. He is a wildlife photographer and author of Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places. He was recently in town for an event about making sure all children, especially Black and Hispanic kids, get access to the great outdoors. Welcome to the show, Dudley.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, in the African-American community, things like hiking and that sort of thing is considered, what, like a white activity? Where's the color line here, and how does that happen?
Well, you know, it's about family traditions in the outdoors, I think. And I think for families of color, those traditions really don't exist in a large, you know, quantity, I guess you could say, in terms of it's just not the kind of thing that was passed forward from granddad to father to son. You know, I think that as African Americans moved out of the Deep South and into urban spaces, looking for life sort of in a dignified way, you know, a living wage, so on and so forth, some of the outdoor skill sets that they did have, such as, you know, the agriculture and all that sort of thing, and they just didn't pass those things forward, and so and those skill sets weren't really that useful in that urban environment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tilling a field, slopping hogs, those kinds of things, you know, pulling crops, those kinds of things weren't you know, applicable when you go to Chicago and you're going to end up being a butler or a maid or something like that. So you know, it's just a sort of a breakdown of that sort of thing. I mean, it's not recreation. I think outdoor recreation is probably largely considered perhaps a white thing. I think there's the disposable income piece that allows European Americans to do those kinds of things, and I think for African Americans and perhaps for Hispanic Americans, you know, those kinds of things just had not quite happened yet, and they're coming online. So I'm hopeful for the future.
Transportation's another issue. I mean, I live in the city too. You have to get there.
Well, yeah, you've got to get there, and I think that, you know, for some people, obviously transportation is a big issue, but I mean, all people of color don't have transportation issues. Some of them, mm-hmm. It's an education thing where they just don't know and they aren't aware of the opportunities. So I would say for a large number that's also the case. So I think what happens is people associate people of color with having, you know, issues with, you know, poverty and so on and so forth. And it's, There certainly is a large number, but it doesn't apply to all of them.
Right. So. You're a wildlife photographer. As a young man growing up in Columbus, how did you first get interested in the outdoors?
Well, you know, Hoover Dam up there, I'm not sure, off Sunbury Road, I believe, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly. That was my place. That's where I connected with nature as a kid. My parents took us there on weekend family picnics, and I found that in that space, I just felt really free and just sort of, you know, able to do whatever I wanted to do as long as I stayed within, you know, my mom and dad could see me or I could hear them if they called me. And so that was my first connection with Hoover.
So you were recently at the Leave No Child Inside Summit at the Grange Insurance Audubon Center. What types of outreach were discussed? What sort of strategies were you talking about there?
Well, you know, we were, I think, in many ways, people were just really excited about sharing ideas and things that they had sort of programs that they worked with and participated in terms of trying to get kids into the outdoors. And so there was just a lot of information sharing that went on there and a really huge positive vibe. And I think people thoroughly enjoyed themselves. I think it was a, an audience that wasn't too large, you get lost, but wasn't so small that you felt like, why am I here? It was the perfect size. So it was really good.
For your book, Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places, you interviewed 19 people of color that you met in the field, people out on the hiking trails, right?
Well, I mean, it was more of a word of mouth thing. I met one or two people, and then they said, "Oh my goodness, you've got to go talk to this person. They work, Bureau of Land Management or Park Service or whatever." And so it was just kind of people were directing me into introducing me to different people. So it kind of was that kind of a thing. So.
And you asked them how they became involved in the outdoors and why they value it. And why they think blacks, people of color, are nearly absent from, nature areas and that sort of thing. And what were their answers? Were they a lot the same kind of answer, or did they vary?
Well, fortunately, they varied, which
makes your book a lot more interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, because I basically set out with about 12 to 15 questions, and I asked everyone the same questions. And it was nice that different people had different answers. Things that people had in common, they were frequently from areas that you would expect them to be from, originally from places like Detroit and Chicago, and then they all had connections to the Deep South, which is another aspect of our lives that's basically where the railroad lines left the South and ended. In the North is where you commonly find large concentrations of African Americans. And so, coming out of Jackson, Mississippi, maybe heading into Chicago or whatever, people rode those trains heading north. That's where they ended up. And so a lot of people in the book ended up, their family histories were from these places. And so, different people had different sort of entries into the out-of-doors. And some of them actually did have some family traditions in the out-of-doors. But most of them just loved being in the space and the freedom of it. And, they got into it in a number of different ways. And so it was just interesting to listen to them, tell me all their little stories. And I actually recorded it all and still have it all on audio. So it's nice to go back and listen.
My guest right now, Dudley Edmondson, he's wildlife photographer and author of Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places. Also with me, author Jeff Ault is still with us. He wrote Get Your Kids Hiking, How to Start Them Young and Keep It Fun. And also Peg Hanley from the Metro Park Systems with us. So if you have a question or comment for any of them, give us a call, 614-292-8513. How much of a difference did it make, Dudley, when they started very young?
Well, I think it makes a huge difference. I mean, in addition to me, doing things with my parents, as a kid, I was also in the Boy Scouts, and I think all of that stuff really helps a lot. And it also, I think, helps to have an adult sort of role model, mentor person in your life who is, has some outdoor skill sets. I think that really helps a lot. So I think, putting them in contact with people who know what they're doing and then, getting them started in things like, boys club, girls club, boy scouts, I think that really helps a lot.
Peggy Hanley, do you see a lot out there like that?
Yeah, and something that we've just done is we have different populations that tend to use different of our metro parks. Battelle Darby Creek has a high Hispanic population. Several years ago, we put a piñata up. Just this summer, we hired a part-time naturalist who is bilingual. Just this weekend, he was doing some spontaneous programs on the bison at Battelle Darby Creek. We were able to tweet those out, recognizing that the Latino community is heavily involved in social media. So sometimes it's coming to a park and seeing people that look like you, whether it's the staff people or the amenities, the signage in that. So, and we have different groups. We have a significant Somali population in Columbus, second in the nation, heavy users of Sharon Woods Metro Parks. And so having having staff that can speak the language sometime, or being able to interpret, or sensitivity to cultural different types of things, I think goes a long way to making your parks a friendly place for people.
Jeff Ault, I wanted to ask you about your book and whether it's written in a way that parents who have never hiked before, so maybe it's somebody who wants to start that tradition, they didn't grow up with it themselves. And is this a book that could be useful to them, too, or do you have to be sort of, are you assuming a certain level of experience?
No, the idea of the book was to make this very easy to read, all the pertinent information to get started from ground zero. So if you have no skill set, you could read this and know what to do. And so I put it together that way and wrote it in a style where, so if you're just... every question you could think of, I tried to answer as if you know nothing. I include some chapters towards the end, some discussion for the seasoned hiker who now feels like a novice because they have a child. So. but yeah, so it's meant for that entry level family that is just trying to get into this. And it's your playbook is what I wanted it to be. You could go to the chapter for the age level of kids you're interacting with.
Dudley, when you referred to the scouts and so forth, you reminded me of my own father who grew up in inner city Detroit, and it was because of scouts. They used to go out on field trips, and that's how he got into it, and he turned into a, you know, kind of a citified mountain man. He taught me to backpack. He went, you know, canoeing in wilderness areas and that kind of a thing. So I suppose that's common, but those kind of organizations are in short supply these days.
Yeah, it seems as though they are. I think to some degree, I don't have children. I guess I'm guessing with this, but I think to some degree it's because kids have so many structured activities, soccer, this and that, that they're competing with things like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and I think that for whatever reason, parents are moving their kids into the structured things, and the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Boys and Girls Clubs are suffering as a result of just not having the you know, kids to put into the programs, I think. So that's just a guess. But, I mean, as a kid, I remember we went on a trip, and we went on a fishing trip, and the scout leaders were also church members, and we went fishing. We didn't catch any fish, and they didn't want us to come home with long faces, and so we stopped at a fish market and picked up some fish, and we were able to share with our parents some bass that we had bought at the fish store, and no one knew the difference, but they just didn't want us to be sad for not having caught any fish, and I thought that was pretty cool of them to do that. So
We have an email from Carl. He writes, "Just you wait, young kids are easy. Teens won't go if they can't text." But Jeff Ault, you suggest let them bring their phone with them.
Yeah, you know,
why make it a punishment?
I used to be against technology in the woods, but why fight a losing battle? And the smartphones are actually a tool out there. I mean, you could have your child journal for you as you go using that, or upload to your family Facebook or your blog, and let them take pictures on your phone and
post them. And
yeah, I mean, even the non-reading child can take the pictures, and then they can retell the adventure. You know, you can have a child, just starting to talk, say one word about the picture. So, or you help them tell the story. So, yeah, there's a lot of pros to that, and it's working. My own kids are doing that now. And then you can download the geocaching app to the phone, and those things are everywhere. That's a fun game too.
And there's the tree identification app that you just put over a leaf that scans it, tells you the tree. You can call in wrens, warblers. I mean, I'm not
right.
I'm glad it's there because those are the kids we need to get into our parks, and if that's what brings them in.
And these smartphones and iPads, you can record audio. So if there's a bird and you want to identify what bird it is by the sound, you can record it, play it back later, and to somebody who knows birds.
So, Carl, just make sure it's a nice, fancy smartphone. that they have when they go along with you. I want to thank Dudley Edmondson for joining us. Dudley, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yes, it was a pleasure.
Dudley Edmondson, he's a wildlife photographer, a Columbus native, and author of the book Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places. Also, Jeff Ault, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me on, Ann.
Jeff Ault, he's a veteran hiker and author of Get Your Kids Hiking, How to Start Them Young and Keep It Fun. And Peg Hanley of the Metro Parks, thank you so much, Peg, for joining us as well.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Wexner Center for the Arts, presenting Blues for Smoke, an exhibition featuring work by more than 40 artists, exploring the blues genre and its influence on contemporary art. Running through December 29th. More information on Blues for Smoke is at wexarts.org.